Hello, everyone, and welcome to a very special interview episode for the DMs After Dark and Rennie Plays Games feeds. We structured this like one of my Perspective Checks episodes, but me and Troy sat down with a geek therapist that we met at a local con recently and could not wait to talk more with her about what she does. So please enjoy. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Perspective Checks. We have our first returning guests, and we have a very exciting guest joining us today, and I cannot wait to talk about it. I am joined by Troy. Hey, Troy.
Hey.
And I am joined by Liz Green. Liz, will you please introduce yourself to everyone out there?
Hi, I'm Liz Green. I'm a licensed mental health therapist out of Worcester, Massachusetts. But I am also here because I am also a certified geek therapist.
Which is the coolest title, maybe ever.
Agreed.
Very, very exciting stuff. Yes, this week, as you will learn, we're going to go through we have to do our opening questions here on Perspective Checks as we get to know the people that we have on the show. Troy, we've heard your answers to these before, but if anything's changed, feel free to chime in.
I'm going to
direct these questions, though, to Liz. Liz, how long have you been playing RPGs or in the hobby?
So I always feel like the odd man out in this question because I've been playing strategy games for probably about like 13, 14 years. And then TTRPG is probably only like 10. I didn't discover it until I was like late 20s, early 30s. It was I was in a new area trying to find new people to hang out with and trying to branch out and make a network. And I happened to find, I found a local comic shop that just did game nights every like Thursday night. I get introduced to that way. And then when I started getting into strategy games, actually my friend's husband, who like played D&D all his life, was like, hey, do you want to play D&D? And so like, we started, and that is the longest game. Like, we still play. So we play like once a month. So we have this campaign that's been going on for like 10 years. But
holy cow.
That's epic. Yeah. That's awesome.
Damn.
That is an incredible rarity. You are in a very small percentage of people who've played that long.
10-year campaign, Liz?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Holy moly.
And I love that you say you feel like an odd man out and say only 10 years. You've been in it for a long time. You know, even the DMs, I think some of us have been less than that. And
well, it's funny because I always feel like I meet people who have been playing like their whole life. You know what I mean? So people who have been playing since they're like 13, 14, 15 years old. So they're like, oh, you know, I've been playing for 40 years or I've been playing for 20 years. And I'm just like, I'm a baby DM.
No, it's funny though. That's funny because you say that Troy started playing when he was young because Amber got into it in middle school. So you were in
eight.
Yeah, you were very young.
I was in second grade.
And what's funny is you got me into it after I'd graduated college. So I'm in the similar boat where like I was an adult by the time I played it for the first time. So it's funny when you come to it at different ages like that. Maybe it'd be interesting to see if there's like a trend to people who played it when they were very young and what they end up liking, and then people who got into it later or their journey anyway.
I would imagine there's probably a crossover between like generations, and there's probably a generational difference between when you start playing RPGs to like the equivalent of a boomer RPG player versus a Gen Z RPG player. I bet there are differences.
There totally are differences. Like I am playing with some people who are like long time, like played before 5e and like all of that. Like I feel like I've been very lucky in the game masters I've experienced, because I know that there can be horror stories, but I've been very lucky, and a lot have been really awesome, but they know their stuff. Like they know their worlds, they know their you know, stuff when it comes, especially specifically with D&D, like, and they wrap some of the old stuff with the new stuff. Like I'm like, I am never going to be able to remember all the crap you remember.
Yeah, the stuff you store away for a long time.
For
and
sure.
I can't believe I didn't think about this. You said you've been playing 10 years and you said, oh, you know, people who played before 5e. And in my brain, I just went, yeah, I mean, oh my gosh, 5e is 10 years old this year. Like, oh my gosh.
Holy shit, it is?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Dang.
Wow. So, sort of a good segue, because you started with D&D through friends, and I love that you found RPGs through a community in a new place, because I do think that one of the best things about RPGs, I was just talking to my wife about this, is, you know, how it fosters a sense of community. And I feel like people find their people in RPGs pretty often, but what games have you been playing lately? Anything different or interesting or...
So I've been doing a lot of D&D due to like work and stuff, but I've also, as, Troy can attest to, I've been playing some Chum.
Chum,
yes.
Which is
so good.
I think you guys both played it, right? Like, it is a shark survival game. It's got, it's D6 rolls, and it's kind of like Cthulhu, where you have sanity versus hope. But it's very simple dynamics that I do love that. And it's timed. So it doesn't go on for hours. It's like at max, it's an hour and a half. And it lends itself a lot to role play, which is my favorite part of TTRPGs. You know, I could care less about mid-maxing and all this. Like, I want the, like, you know, improv and the, like, fun scenarios.
Yeah, me and Troy are on the same.
Yeah. Can I pipe in real quick, Rainey?
Yeah.
So that reminds me of something that I wanted to ask you, and it's just perfect that you brought it up. So obviously you alluded to the fact that you're a role-playing centered person. You're more about the story, about the role-playing than you are necessarily about, you know, min-maxing and the mechanics and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I guess this is a two-part question. The first would be, when you're using role-playing games with your clients, how do you kind of accommodate it if your client is maybe more interested in the min-maxing aspect? Does that tell you things about their personality as a whole? Does it kind of lend insights to maybe things you might want to work through or work on throughout therapy? So that's the first question. Uh-huh. And then the second question was time constraints to therapy, right? I know a lot of times, typically, a therapy session is approximately 50, 55 minutes. And some can be longer, but for billing purposes, right, there's usually a set time block. So how do you deal with that in a role-playing setting?
So for your first question, yes. What a player wants to play is always information about how they work. You know what I mean? So if you have a person who is really interested in the numbers or the characteristics or the specific rules, like, it tells you something about flexibility or getting stuck or maybe their comfortability or uncomfortability with interactions or their abilities to like problem solve with others or like that kind of stuff. So like there's no wrong. It's just more of like information about them. And that's the piece about like geek therapy. It's like, it's not about kind of saying like, this is how you play or this is what you do. It's more of like, okay, like, you can get a person to kind of tell you about them without telling us about them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of times people might come to therapy. I always tell people coming through the door is like the hardest part because, oh God, mm-hmm. what is this? Like, even though they know it's therapy, like, what are they going to think? Am I going to be judged? Am I weird? Like, all these questions come up. And so I like the idea of geek therapy because it lets, I call it a buffer.
It's like a degree of separation.
Yeah, like it gives people a degree of separation where they can feel out the situation, give you insight without feeling too vulnerable too quickly.
Wow.
So allow that space so that you can build rapport without too much pressure. Because let's face it, you know, you go to the intake, hey, have you had trauma? Have you done this? Has this happened? You know, you do have to do those things, but then it's kind of like, if that person like barely, like second session, they barely know you. And then you're like, so tell me your life story. Tell me this.
Right.
I mean, like, that's not like, they know they're in therapy, but not everyone is like ready for that. Like, you're still just a stranger to them.
Yes.
So this gives that like buffer space. And then get to this. What was the second part of your question? Sorry.
Second question, Liz, was just how do you incorporate the time constraints of kind of a traditional therapy session with role playing?
Yes. So
what does that look like for you?
So typically what I what I do is typically a group is an hour, but I make mine an hour and a half, and I have my clients kind of sign an agreement that there's extra time, so they pay a little extra for that extra time.
Okay.
But for that hour and a half, then there's the way I run it is a bit structured, just so that way I can keep within the time constraints.
Yes.
So like even though you're like a geek therapist, it's still kind of like, well, here's all the details and what you're doing, but like figure out how you want to run it. Right. And
yeah,
so
right.
I've kind of created like a curriculum.
Oh, I love that.
So I have like a close group curriculum. You know, this spring I'm doing a 15-week curriculum. So, and basically every group has a skill. And so basically what I've done, so the theme of my group this spring is relationship skills. And so basically every group I do a basically like in like intro check-in, how's people week, what did they maybe do or use from previous week skills, that kind of thing. Then I introduce the skill of the day. Today's skill was basically like conflict resolution. So we talked about some of the skills. And then there's like about an hour of gameplay. And so it's not, I might tweak some of the aspects to try to pull out certain things for players.
Sure.
Maybe utilize group stuff, but it's really gameplay. And so they play the game, they,
right,
you know, interact, do that group stuff. And then the last 15 minutes is debrief. So we debrief about the group itself, and we basically talk about, you know, how they might have seen the skills maybe in the group, if anyone used them, how they might use them in the rest of the week, like that kind of thing. So that's how kind of I have structured it for my group. And then it helps me kind of, I kind of time myself. So I know like, okay, by this time I need to be moving on to here, or I need to,
right.
It doesn't always happen super neatly,
sure. Yeah,
but
sure.
You know, at least it gives me parameters of like knowing like, okay, I'm here, this is where I need to be, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that actually touches on one of the things I wanted to ask about, which was when you come up with your sessions that you're going to be playing within games, in the game portion of the therapy session, is it targeted towards certain patient concerns and therefore you're writing like a scenario that has to hit on certain or like present certain things, or is that not at all how?
You can. So like you can take certain, like, so like I said, I did a curriculum with a kind of theme because a lot of the people I have a group this, I call it like semester, is people from from the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were like, we want to work on relationship skills. So that's what I brought in and wrote the curriculum for relationship skills. For specific encounters, I might tweak encounters so that it can have a therapeutic aspect, because playing games can be therapeutic, but they're not necessarily always therapy. So that's one thing Geek Therapeutics talks a lot about, is like, how do you do things? So for example, when I was getting my certification as a therapeutic game master, like, your final thing is you have to write a therapeutic encounter. And so like part of our, it was kind of an intense like certification, because we had like a class and then we had like an hour of like, we played a game and then like, and then did some of like the group structuring stuff. And so like my final project was like in the gameplay during my certification, like we did not win. Like we, our target guy got killed, like like
it did not work out. Is always an option in RPGs.
So I wrote a therapeutic encounter that was like for the people, you know, we had to run it for our fellow classmates, and we, you know, I kind of wrote an encounter of like dealing with basically like self-talk. And so basically I had the characters kind of like in a scenario where they're walking back to the village and they have to give this bad news. And on the way it is raining. And as the rain falls down, it falls harder and harder, where then it starts to like the levels of water flood. And they start to see their reflections in the water, and their the water reflections start to talk at them and start to say like, you suck at life, you know,
wow,
you know, you're an awful person and all of this stuff. And the characters, I didn't tell them this, that what they needed to do, they had to figure it out. But the more that like fed into it, the more the rain got faster and the flood started coming more. And finally, my characters are like the people who are playing this scenario. They're like, we did the best we can. They start just singing it. And so like the rain reduced and them being able to travel back to the village. And then at the village, they had to have this hard conversation. And, you know, they did their best to like kind of do what they could. And so I had the NPCs encourage them, like be thankful for them, for like letting them know what happened and trying their best. You know what I mean? And so like giving them that reinforcement for like having that hard conversation kind of thing. So like that would be an example of like a therapeutic encounter that you would tweak or write right. for like a specific concern.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Yeah, incredible scenario. That's
a really cool. Yeah, that's just a really cool. And Roy and I talked in his episode about those downtime moments, right? Like not every important moment in an RPG game is a combat or is something like that. It can be about just the small moments of, it's not even the conversation with that NPC. It's the moment in between where you're thinking about, what are we going to say? Right. And a lot of times that happens out of character, but I love that you made it a thing where the characters see themselves and have to talk themselves through this moment.
And sometimes really- what you do is you, if you know particular clients, whether you're doing one-on-one or in a group, have particular concerns, like maybe they're quiet and they want to try to get more like vocal, more self-esteem to like speak out. Like you might write in something specific in the adventure to specifically draw them out.
Yeah.
Or vice versa. Like you might have another character that kind of like can sometimes like kind of overpower. And so giving, you know, writing something in so that it kind of gives them opportunity to think about stepping back and letting someone else kind of take over kind of thing, for sure.
Yeah, that's awesome. I wanted to just real quick, Liz, you mentioned something a little while ago about how the way people play characters, their preferences, they can always tell you something about the people.
Yeah.
And I think Rainey and I were both geeking up when you said that, because we just did an episode not too long ago on tropes, right?
Yep.
And I think the title was like, why are we the way we are? Or why are we this way?
Why do
or
we something play like what we play?
Yeah.
Yeah. So because in our role-playing experiences, we definitely have kind of tendencies and tropes that we lean towards.
Yeah.
Rainey, do you want to talk just real quick about kind of what yours is? And then you're not on the clock, Liz, so we're not going to ask you for any differential diagnosis or anything. But
I agree. I think both Troy and I made eye contact through Zoom when you started talking about, the type of games and the type of player this person, you know, the character this player inhabits. We were like, that's so
we're
funny.
Like, oh shit.
I am a very, like, from a GM perspective, I'm a writer's room person. I actually don't want all the control all the time. But when I play a character, I want to know everything, which in my, like, at my table, if I had a player like me, I'd be like, I hate it. I'd outsource my own work. But for me, I'm such a nerd and I come from a science background, but I need a creative outlet. So when I play characters in RPGs, I always tend to play like the intellectuals or somebody who has a burning question, and I want to interact with the world of whatever this game is set in, whatever genre, whatever it is, and I want to like hear about what just makes it work, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why, but I love poking at the world and being like, ooh, what's like, how's this magic duel? What is this magic? What are the bigger implications or like, you know, ramifications of such a thing? Or
right.
You know,
right, that's awesome.
And then for me, yeah, I'm actually in some ways I'm kind of the opposite. I'm the dichotomy of Rainey, where I am also a role playing forward player. It's not to say that I don't enjoy mechanics and stuff. I appreciate them. And I think some of them are very clever and funny and cunning and engage various parts of your creativity and that kind of stuff. So I'm all about that. But I am for sure a role playing person first. And if we're playing in a setting that's very beautiful and has, you know, all kinds of magic or heroic elements or stuff like that, I still like to focus on kind of the little things in the mundane, right? Like people are going around, you know, slaying dragons and flying on magic carpets and stuff, but like they still interact with other people.
Yeah.
And that part is a lot of times the impactful stuff I like to focus on. So like some of the silly things my characters have done in the past is like, shit, Rainy, I don't know, help me out here. Like
Troy kind of seems to play characters, I feel like, that are in a crazy world dealing with a very simple problem, right? Like they want to ground themselves in like humanity, not being crazy. Like D&D world is like, gods exist and literally change things on the daily and dragons control entire things. And Troy's characters are like, I just wish, like, you know, my town had fresh water or something. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, yeah. Like I found this rock that took me a lot of effort to get, and I want to give it to you because that meant something to me, and I hope it means something to you. So here's a rock, like just stuff like that. And I love that, but
that's great. Cause like, I mean, in geek therapy kind of world, that would be kind of like people typically will play something that looks like them. And that will either be like, they call it like, you can play yourself, your ideal self, or your flawed self.
Oh, I love that so much.
Basically, like, and sometimes like, if you're aware, you can utilize that. So like, if you're playing your first, like your ideal self, you might be practicing things that you wish you did more, or you might, whereas if you're playing your flawed self, you might be working on things you struggle with in a different way. Like, so like, I, you know, like most females, I like to play a barbarian.
Hell yes. Some parlatch going on.
But my barbarian tends to be that like awkward, flawed self, like breaking stuff just to see what happens. Like, we'll like go feet first, like into something. You know, I try to make sure that I'm not like overpowering things so people are just like, what the heck is going, like just chaotic. My alignment is totally at all times like chaotic good, like
I love it. Breaking objects, not necessarily the patriarchy, right? Exactly. Start small, work your way up. Yep.
Exactly. So like, but it's ultimately the kind of like, because they like, I think all the time, and I gotta be in like people's head, it like gives me a break. It like gives me a little bit of a break, and like gives me that opportunity when I'm playing to just kind of like have fun, relax, be invested, and explore things in that like not overly worry about consequences.
Yeah, snap decisions over analyzing. Yeah,
right, exactly, which is what I do every day. So like, I don't want to do that in gameplay.
Right.
For sure. So like, yeah, sometimes you end up playing things out without realizing you're playing things out too. Like, so sometimes you'll be like, oh yeah, I picked this thing. I don't know why I picked this thing. You know what I mean? And then like, next thing you know, like it actually ends up being really meaningful or that kind of thing.
Sure. You know? Yeah. It's I would imagine the discovery of that can be therapeutic. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For sure. For sure. Like if you're picking an ideal self, you may be a quiet person, but you decide, hey, I'm going to play a bard in this game. And so that it forces you to really like socialize and spend, you know, really talk about like, how do I use my charisma and like all of those kind of skills that you don't feel like you do in real life. Or if you're like, okay, my flawed self, you know, I tend to put my foot in my mouth and like that kind of thing. Okay. Like, so you play that out, but how does that play out? Is it as bad as you think? Like that kind of thing.
Oh, I love that.
It's not even just like, what's the diagnosis? It's more of like, okay, like what parts of yourself and like, so you accept all those parts of yourself and how can that be okay? You know what I mean?
I love that. I'm skipping ahead to one of the ending questions I always ask people at the end of these interviews. And I'm going to just say some homework, because normally it says like, do you have any last bits of wisdom, advice, or homework? Yeah. I'm giving listeners right now homework. I love there's three characters, self, ideal self, flawed self. I'm going to like rethink like, what characters have I played? And like, does that, you know what I mean? Like, what is that? Which one was which, you know? Because I love that. That's really clever.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely something I've heard in therapy before. You know, I think the kind of rendition I heard was you have, I think it was four selves.
Yeah.
There is the person that you are, the person that others think you are, the person that you think you are.
Right.
And then can't remember what the fourth one was, but it just really kind of, I connected to that, that premise. And I love it, right? Because sometimes the discovery of like, I was being more outgoing and stuff like that, even though I'm personally more reserved. And you as the therapist can kind of say, hey, I noticed you did these things and I thought it was really awesome. How did that feel for you? Right. And then that might give them the opportunity to realize like, holy shit, I didn't even realize I was doing this thing that I've wanted to do or that I've struggled with.
Right. And that's also an element of what they call like distance learning. You know what I mean? In therapy, they do a lot of that in like basic play therapy, role play therapy, like that kind of
stuff. Drama therapy.
Drama therapy, you know, of this idea of like we were talking about like buffer earlier. Like it's a little bit of like a lot of times I always kind of joke around with clients. I'm like, you know, therapy really fails when you go to therapy and you don't slow things down enough to really understand how you're going to integrate things and how you can be aware to integrate things in your real life. So sometimes people feel like they go, they learn a skill, they go home and they're like, that was nice.
And now what?
Yeah, exactly. A lot of times like gameplay and not just gameplay, like geek therapy focuses on things like movies, anime, comics, superheroes, like it's not just games, but whatever avenue that you're super interested, not only does it create motivation in a distance that kind of way to work on your things that doesn't feel as intense, but also what it does is like you have that space to practice where there's not severe consequences, right? And I'm working on being more social, but I'm super scared. I've got social anxiety and I don't want to talk to people at the, you know, my friends want to go to the bar and I can't even get myself to go, you know, but if I'm in therapy and I'm at the tavern, right? I'm meeting my fellow travelers at the tavern. I can practice with like the not real me.
Right.
And there's no severe consequences to that. Like you might still feel anxious, but like it's, there's a lot of times enough of a comfort of like, but this isn't me. And that allows the space of practice. And believe it or not, practicing in play is still practice. And so you'll see them translate some of that outside of that for sure.
That concept reminds me a little bit of exposure therapy and overcoming phobias, right? Sometimes people have to start very far removed. You know, hey, think of a spider. Just imagine one in your head. We're going to start there, right?
Right.
Or even maybe one step further back. Think of how you feel when you think of a spider, right? And then you can now eventually next session, we're using pictures. And then, and eventually, you know, maybe you'll even bring a live spider in. Maybe they'll hold a spider, right? There's all these steps that progress to help them overcome their phobias.
Right.
I definitely see just kind of a similarity with that. Working inside of an RPG creates that step away.
And it works really well with what you were saying before, where these people show up with a character that they've been playing in these sessions. And like you were saying, you can tell based on the character they chose to play and over the course of these sessions, what they've been engaging with and whatnot, that there are things they want to interact with. And then there are things that you can tell that maybe they've been avoiding and you can kind of nudge things in their direction and say like, hey, now it's time to interact with this part of it. Or like, try this out. You know what I mean? And you have that distance that you can feel. That's I like thinking about
it. There will be consequences in there, but the consequences are in game. So like they can learn something without it being super like, oh my God, this was a big deal. And I don't think I feel like I can come back from that. So like, I have a really funny example. So my group, I think it was my first group that I was running. It's near the end of the venture. They have to travel back and they decide to take a ship back to where they were going. And the bard of the group decides like, oh, don't worry, everybody. I've got the money. I'm going to pay the fare, blah, blah, blah. So he, you know, everybody gets on, they get on the ship, and he decides he does not want to pay. And so he freaks out one of someone's like dragons that they collected along the way, puts the boat on fire. Okay.
Oh, no.
So then I got to do a whole improvised thing of like, because I wasn't like, oh, okay, that's it. Like, I was like, no, okay, roll some dex checks. Like, are you going to survive from this burning boat? Like, do you get back to land? Like,
how long can you swim? Yeah. Like, what's your constitution? Right. Bard.
Right.
That bard went from the jack of all trades to the jack of asses.
It was like a hilarious encounter, but like it was consequences of like, okay, when you make an impulsive decision, there are going to be consequences. And that won't just affect you. You know what I mean? No, luckily no one was like super angry about it, but there's like items like that might happen in adventures that like, again, with that buffer is like, yeah, there were consequences. You can learn something from that, but you didn't have to worry about like, oh, I burned this real life friendship because I did X, you know what I mean? Or because I was impulsive in this way, for example. The other thing is creating safe space. So one of the biggest things I didn't mention is in groups, super important, is doing, obviously many people are doing this anyway, but session zero. Our session zeros, we do consent sheets. So we have anonymous, like everybody's, like you don't put your name on it, but you fill out the material that you're comfortable with or you're not comfortable with. I collect it at the end and then I give everyone like a master sheet. So everyone understands like what topics or, you know, ways to play so that everybody is more on the same page about what's okay. I also tend to use, and I use this safety mechanism even in social play, is the X card. The X card is like, if, whether it's a physical card or just saying the word X, like if something is happening and it's triggering or it's uncomfortable or you're just, it's too much, you just say X and everybody moves on to the next thing. And so like doing that session zero to ever get everyone on the same page is super important, because then, you know, I mean, some of these games have scary features or dramatic, you know what I mean? Or deep material or whatever. And some people are all about it and that's great. But then some people can be a lot. So like, it's just getting everyone on the same page so that there's a way to communicate if something kind of feels like it's have people have a way to set some boundaries around games.
Right.
Yep.
We use those in our games too. Lines and veils, X cards, session zeros. Yeah. Those are all super important. Even in a group that's very close knit, that's very connected. I mean, we've been playing for a decade or more together and we still do that, right? Because people change.
Yeah.
So
people change, their experiences change. So what was okay at one point may not be okay at another point. So refreshing is every, you know, and also like when you do a session zero and then you also have the X card, say something comes up, you know what I mean, that you didn't realize was a trigger for you. You know what I mean?
Right.
It just gives that opportunity without needing.
Yeah.
And the comfortability to just say X instead of feeling embarrassed if you wanted, you feel like you need to explain, if that makes sense.
Yes. Yeah, right.
No need to explain, just, yep.
Absolutely. I had another quick question for you, Liz. So this is maybe getting a little bit back to the basics of what you said in the beginning about how you're a certified geek therapist and you worked through a specific agency. I know when we talked at Captain Con, you mentioned that to me and my mind literally exploded. Like it actually blew up in front of your eyes. I don't know if you saw it, but I felt it. But I remember one of the first questions I asked is like, hey, is this like ACA accredited? And you're like, yes.
Yeah.
So that is wild to me. Not because I'm questioning the validity of games and therapy. I mean, obviously things like play therapy and drama therapy have been used for a very long time and have shown incredible clinical efficacy. But I guess my question is, do you know anything about what that process looked like? Maybe how long ago it got ACA certified as a form of therapy? Because for the lay people out there, if something is ACA accredited, it means a few different things. Number one, it means it's typically backed by peer-reviewed professional, either medical or, you know, high-level research. And then another thing that it means is it's typically a therapy or a a technique that's covered by insurance, which is huge for accessibility. So do you, could you maybe go into that a little bit, Liz?
Yeah. So I was not super integral in the, I don't know how long it started before I joined in, but it is fairly new. So one of the founders is Anthony Bean, and one of his first papers is The Rise of the Use of TTRPGs in Therapeutic Endeavors, and he wrote that with Megan Connell. If you look up Geek Therapeutics, they have a whole page of their research. So they have research. They're currently doing research because it is fairly new. It is APA certified. It is basically that, you know, their certifications are worth CEUs for providers. So it's all like a part of the system, but they're continuing to do like more and more research as we're kind of speak. So, yeah.
Nice. And I will link Geek Therapeutics' website in the show notes so that way people can check it out as far as what's going on there and all of the ongoing research. Perfect. That's really cool.
And Geek Therapeutics are being, you know, people are taking classes of it, not just therapists, but even teachers are taking classes off of Geek Therapeutics. You don't necessarily need to do the therapy. I mean, it's an expensive certification, but you don't necessarily need to do that in order to utilize the information. So like, it's sure. One of those things that like, I've met some teachers that try to use it in their classrooms or elements of it. You know what I mean? That kinds of things. So, you know, they're pretty open about where people might utilize some of this for sure. I got certified as a therapeutic dungeon master in, I want to say 2020. It was like just around the pandemic. I was like, oh, good. I can get all the use this way. Anyway.
Good timing.
Great time to do that, by the way.
And then I became like a full-on geek therapist, I think, in the fall of that year. It is because it's fairly new. It's a pretty difficult certification. Well, some certifications is like, oh, you do a 24-hour thing and you're done. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, no, this was like a 10, 12 week, like you take a class, you play a game for a couple of hours, you have a test at the end. It is, so they make sure like, yeah, you're doing something. Like,
it's worth the investment though, because then you get paid to play role-playing games. So that's basically every nerd's dream.
And little plug, like if you are working for yourself and you need, like you're getting things written off for your taxes, any of your D&D stuff, it's written off on taxes.
Well,
Rainey is going to become a clinical mental health counselor right now. He just signed up.
And we all know that like relational, like group therapy work can be so profound for people. And I started my group, like this was, okay, so like I get certified in 2020. When we started coming back in person, I started my first group, and my first group was just a social skills group. And at the time, I had a lot of personal clients that were struggling. Like I deal with a lot of like depression, anxiety, trauma, like that kind of stuff. And so coming off of the pandemic, which was a shared trauma, you know, even for myself, like coming out and being social again, like I talk to people all the time and I felt out of sorts with being social and like everything. So I was imagining that for my clients. And so I created the group because it was like this time of year where people struggle anyway, because you got seasonal depression, there's not the holidays to look forward to. Preach. Like this time of year, people really struggle because of a combination of things. So I was like, if nothing else, my depressed and trauma clients will have at least maybe one thing that they can look forward to every week.
Yes, I love that. I love that, Liz.
And then also just like having them have a good experience socializing and hopefully them taking that and, you know, taking that outside. So when we're saying like, when they're like, I'm so depressed, like you know, depression is about disconnection, you know? And so it's like, getting people to like learn how to like reconnect, you know what I mean, and connect in ways that feel safe and comfortable in a lot of ways. No.
Sorry, I had to drop the listeners won't see this, but I had to drop a comment in the chat when she said, you know, depression is about disconnect. I just typed split the party ? So you don't have to be a professional geek therapist to know that that's generally a terrible idea.
And that was the funny thing. Like the first two groups that I ran, one of the first things they did was split the party.
Yeah, somebody runs away, right? Yeah.
And it's like, it was, and one of the characters, like, it's kind of a joke, but like, they split the party and one of the characters almost died because they encountered a chair mimic and they were by themselves. And so then, and luckily they survived after that, but then now they stab every chair that they see in any of the following groups. Like,
I love it. I love it so much. Oh, Rainey, can I ask another question? But I'm sorry. I feel like I hijacked your show.
Not at all, man. I'm just here to basically be in the middle and be like, this is great. You guys are the ones who know what you're talking about. By all means, man.
Okay. I guess I wanted to ask you, Liz, my knee-jerk reaction is to think that a lot of the clients that maybe partake in geek therapy maybe have started with the geek side of things, right? Not necessarily the therapy side of things. I wanted to ask you, how many times do you get a client maybe that has either never done either of those things, is brand new to therapy and brand new to role playing, or how often do you get a client that is brand new to role playing but has done therapy before? Because I feel like for whatever reason, it just seems like that bridge to starting therapy would be maybe a little easier than the bridge to starting role playing. I don't know why I think that, but can you elaborate on that? No,
that's true. So like actually, I don't think a lot of people know about geek therapy. So I've only had one person who's engaged in geek therapy that sought me out for geek therapy specific because it was a teen and their parents had them engaged in geek therapy in Florida and then they moved up here. And right now I'm one of two geek therapists in the state. And so please try.
Yeah, it's a pretty niche field. So
more this specifically, but right now for most of my groups, some have dabbled in TTRPGs, but a lot of them actually have not played. So my first session zero was a lot of, I kind of had like an extended session to zero. So it was like two sessions and, you know, so it was getting them walking through them, like characters and what he used. I did find and buy, someone did a really good D&D cheat sheet on Etsy that I bought and I basically laminated it and like gave it players.
I love that.
And like I said too, because the way I GM is like, I've been very lucky with GMs in the past who are very much like, look, like, yes, there are rules, but like, if you think of something cool, say it and then we'll figure it out. Like, and they were so gentle with me when I was a new player and that like helped me learn and it learned a little along the way. And so that's how I try to GM. So like, I'm just like, I'm more so like, yes, there are rules. You're going to get overwhelmed. You're not even going to remember it all. So like, tell me what you want to do. And then we're going to figure it out. You know what I mean? Let them learn through play and then kind of go from there.
I have a question related to that. Now, obviously, I know Dungeons and Dragons is the biggest game. You know, it's the game everyone knows.
Yeah.
Now, when it comes to things like you saying, you know, there's a lot of mechanics that you're going to look at your sheet and go, I don't know what I'm looking at or I don't remember what to do here. Have you tried other games? Have you found any other games to use in therapy sessions and found that maybe more rules light games and that more freeform, simpler mechanics? Does that help or is it about the tone or setting or is there something that you look for more?
I have used games before D&D before, but in a different way. So like, and I have before becoming certified, I would try to find games that lend itself for like therapeutic skills. So for example, I picked up a game a while back ago called What Oh, and it's an actually it's an active listening game where you have these cards and you have to play them, and it gives you like a scenario, a place, and a feeling. And then each player has to play cards back and forth. And if you play a question, if the person immediately plays something else before answering the question, the other person wins the conversation. And so like it you have to pay attention and you have to be listening. Yeah, my client kicks my butt on that one. But
I'd be terrible at that game. I'd be very bad at that.
Yeah, like that's one that I picked up that is super useful, especially if you're trying to teach somebody about like active listening and focusing on like the conversation or like that kind of stuff. And also to talk about like assumption, you know, like sometimes we get more in our head, so we get out of the conversation. So, you know, I sometimes will like, if couples are interested in it, I might be like, hey, we're going to talk about active listening, but we're going to use a game. And like, and then they might play a scenario and get them to understand of like, did you assume something and that's why you were distracted? Or like, did you, you know what I mean? So like, that's a game I actually recently used. They came out with a board game of Choose Your Own Adventure, a few of them. So I utilize that one as well. And that one's good for like collaborative problem solving and like good for like making decisions and communication. And so like I've used that before. And then, you know, like, I mean, I've used some just to like take the pressure off of like face-to-face conversations. So like, I have this German game called like Animals Upon Animals, and it's just a dexterity game. Like you like it? Have you played that?
Awesome. Stack 'em? Is that what you do?
Well, it's like you have this like alligator. It's kind of like opposite Jenga. Like you have these different animal pieces and you have to stack it on top of the alligator, and you take turns about who can stack what, and whoever gets rid of all their animals wins basically. But like, it's a dexterity game. So like, you don't need a whole lot of thinking. So like, you can have a conversation during it and like, kind of really like take the pressure off of like, tell me this thing, and we can just like play the game. So sometimes I've used it that way. That's not necessarily, again, therapy, like the game itself, but how I've utilized maybe some games in that way. And I was doing that way before, so I have experience with like, my first job out of college was like 45-day STAR assessment for kids 0 to 12. And then I did family and home therapy for like a bunch. And then I worked for like 3 different units. So a BTR step down program from the hospital and a 45-day STAR for adolescent boys. And then I went into substance abuse. So like, very intense populations, and like, especially adolescent boys, you know what I mean? Like, don't have that face on conversation, you know, like have these distractors or these ways to kind of connect, and then have them so they can feel comfortable in that space.
Yeah. See, we were talking about how one of those games is about assumptions before you're hearing the whole thing. And obviously we hadn't talked yet, but in my mind, I was thinking, oh, geek therapy, like, I wonder how this works. And in my brain, because I am a RPG hoarder, I buy so many different games because I care about why they're designed a certain way or how the mechanics reinforce like the story they're trying to tell or what have you, that I assumed, I was like, oh, like maybe there's like certain games that are used to talk about certain topics or like certain things are better than others. But it's not even about that, like you're saying. And that's just my assumption before we got there. And I was going to say, Troy played a game that I was like, I wonder if this would make good for that. But I think that maybe hearing more about it, it probably wouldn't. But I do still want Troy to talk about Mindcrawler.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll get into the Mindcrawler thing here in just a quick sec. But just when you were talking about the substance abuse and the youths and that kind of stuff that you had incorporated, I have to just give a quick shout out to one of the most wonderful people that I've ever had the privilege of meeting is coincidentally, the creator of my favorite role-playing game in the whole world. It's called Shadows of Esterin.
Okay.
Anybody that has ever watched any of our stuff knows I love Shadows of Esterin. I have an entire tattoo sleeve dedicated to it, dedicated to my campaign. So I love it. But before he created this game and before he kind of got into this creating the studio and all of that stuff, he was actually a clinical psychologist. And he worked in a hospital setting with terminally ill children. So talk about, I don't know the best way to say it, but you can feel the passion that he puts into creating this thing. Because I'm sure before it was a formal therapy, I'm sure he used stories to help these kids that were struggling with something that's so immense that I can't imagine, right? So I had to drop that. I feel like there's something there, man. Oh, there's something there between therapy and storytelling.
Metaphor is such a big thing. Like sometimes like having a direct conversation doesn't quite hit it where as if you can create, and that's where some of like the more like niche things around like utilizing movies or TV or comics comes in. It's that metaphor. So like, sometimes, you know, like the hero's journey, like Geek Therapeutics talks a lot about the hero's journey, and a lot of material comes from this idea of like a struggle and someone persevering through the struggle and then getting to their side. Right. And therapy is just that, like figuring out and sometimes not hearing, but sometimes like saying, okay, here's the struggle. How do you work around that? Or what do you need in order to get to the other side, even though that's there, you know what I mean? Kind of thing for sure.
Isn't the hero's journey a circle anyway? Yeah. I think, isn't it? Yeah. So,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And it's as old as written language, really. So I did want to quickly, Liz, segue into a game that I recently played. Well, it would have been last year at some point, but the game is called Mind Crawler and it's a solo RPG. Mm. It uses the mechanics of both six-sided dice and it uses cards as well, a deck of playing cards. But the premise of the game is you are navigating and exploring a dungeon that is the inner workings of your mind.
Oh.
And it was an incredibly therapeutic experience for me. Having said that, the creator of this game does have a disclaimer at the top that, you know, hey, I am not a therapist. This is not, you know, intended to be any sort of medical treatment or anything like that. But if you obviously find value in this and enjoy it, then by all means, that's what he is advocating for. But it gave me a wonderful, wonderful opportunity to work through some of the traumas that I've had in my life. It helped me identify some of my strengths, some of my weaknesses. And it was really cool because it did that so intuitively well.
Yeah.
And in an improvisational way. Like I didn't even plan necessarily on these things, but they just kind of happened.
Right.
And it was really beautiful. So I'd highly recommend you look at that. Yeah, it was a wonderful game. And it took maybe an hour, hour and a half. If you're interested, Liz, you can always check out the episode on our podcast.
That'd be super interesting. That's the other thing I find is that there is a lot of people in the, like, at least I find, because I also have some friends that are in the board game industry. And like a lot of people that I have met are like super on board and mindful of like mental health and the conversation and like being mindful about not just mechanics for good gameplay, but like also like thoughts around like things we're discussing now. It's funny. The joke is like therapists typically don't make good games. Because we're so focused on like the therapy aspects, like we gotta leave that to game designers.
yeah. Wait a minute. We need dice. What is this shit?
Right, exactly. like they usually like come out with like good games, and then we just need to like, oh, you just tweak this, and you can use it this way. Like
that's so funny because that's that was like the first thought in my mind. I was like, oh, like I wonder, like are they system nerds like me who are like mining all these games to be like, that's useful in this and that's useful? No, of course not. That would be silly. Like,
I'm
just a nerd who's like, oh, this is interesting.
Oh, well, it reminds me of there is a TTRPG that's like a built like a board game. It's called Fog of Love that recently came out a couple of years ago. Oh. It is a role-playing game that like role plays a relationship, and there's like cards involved, and you have these subjects that you have to like go back and forth, and you see like the decisions that you make and how it affects the relationship, and like what is the ending of that. It's a super interesting.
Holy crap.
Yeah, don't play it if you're not sure about your relationship.
You know what's funny is I wrote my wife into playing games with me all the time, and like we did like we recently did like a Call of Cthulhu game that was like Valentine's Day inspired, and it was like just a love triangle and all this stuff, and luckily she was totally fine with it. But we've actually played one of the choose your own adventure board game things, and it was the two of us controlling the thing, and there were multiple times where we were like, you don't make that decision, and she was like, yes I do, and I was like, no, you don't do that, what are you doing?
Well, so that's like, and that's
more than you bargained for.
Well, that's the connection part too. Like, I met my second date. Like, okay, so with my husband, we went out, we met, we, you know, it luckily hit it off, and so we went on a second date, and we went to a museum, and it was still early, and he was like, "What do you want to do?" And I was like, "Well, my friends are board gaming. If you want to play," and he was like, "Yes." Yes. So like I brought him to people like he didn't know his house, and like we played board games.
Like, you had me at right Yahtzee. There, like.
That's awesome.
No, we did not play Yahtzee. This was by the time I was actually into strategy games. So we played actually one of my favorite like board games, which is Acquire. It's a very old. Not played
a lot of I like strategy.
It's all games about too. Like. Capitalism, unfortunately, but like you're buying.
Oh my god, we're in. Christian is gonna sponsor
you are
it.
You're buying like spots to build hotels and selling them to make money, so you can make the most money at the end of the game.
Is Jeff Bezos a playable character?
No. I think it was like written in like 1970. It's like an old game.
1963 is what I got here. But anyway.
Yeah, leave it to capitalism to reinvent it.
We need to make more money off this thing. It's about making money.
Exactly.
The hubris.
But it that's a fun game. And then like just the one thing also that I've found is like, you know, you're hearing a lot about people getting, there's more anxiety, there's more depression, like people are feeling more disconnected and more isolated. And this was before the pandemic. It's not even like it just got exacerbated by the pandemic. So there's like I think I was listening to NPR the other day, and they had like a whole like not just story, but like talking to some professionals about like, hey, depression, like how do you reconnect and make community and that kind of thing. And like there are spaces that are opening up to do events like board game nights and like stuff. Like, so for example, in Worcester, we have Redemption Rock Convention, which is like a local brewery has allowed a group of us nerds to like take over their brewery every third Thursday of the month. And like a collection of people have basically like try to rally anybody who will like run games and basically say like, okay, come and run games. We have a bunch of games running. Whoever wants to come, it's free. And like, so people can come and play games. And now it's gotten to the point where we're doing every third Thursday of a month and four times a year, a whole day event. And so like this month we're doing like March 23rd Redemption Rock Convention, giving people spaces and opportunities to feel comfortable and to go and meet new people. And again, with that buffer to be comfortable, but like that, a lot of what we're seeing where mental health has a lot to do with isolation. And so like, it's really getting people to like, have those abilities to like, because that's one of the biggest thing complaints I hear from clients is like, I'm an adult, I don't have any friends, like how do I make friends, like you know what I mean? And often I'm like, play games.
Yeah.
I was gonna say one of the things that you were just talking about is like isolation is obviously a symptom or a cause of depression, and community is something that fights that. And I feel like, and I said this at the very beginning, I feel like the TTRPG community, I mean, obviously, anywhere on the internet can be a toxic, terrible place if you find the wrong communities. Yeah.
But for the most part, it is one of the more inclusive, welcoming communities I've ever been a part of. And if you can find, even better, if you can find like a local group that you, you know, make a connection with and find people who like the same things you do and play and have something, like you said, even in your therapy session, something they can look forward to every week. It's just a great way to do that. And yeah, I think that there's a big lack of community in a lot of, you know, America these days.
Everywhere.
As terrible as that sounds.
Well, a lot of this features of people, like, we are more mobile, we can move, we can do things, and then people get caught up in like life, which
the media, the internet.
Yeah, and stuff like that. And not to say that online groups are can't be helpful, because for some people that's connecting and that's great, but for some, like, it's not quite what they need it to be. And so like these real life spaces can like be good. So like having outlets and people knowing about these outlets, like I often tell people, like, there's a website, it's not a dating website, it's called meetup.com. And you can go on the website, put in your zip code, and it'll like ask you what your interests are. And it will give you a list of like events or groups that are getting together around those interests. You know what I mean?
Oh, I love that.
So like I direct people to do like to check that out, or to do like I know for Worcester's doing a better job. Specifically, I will give a shout out to Redemption Rock Brewery, because they're always doing events that aren't, you know, like necessarily alcohol related. It's like they do fun runs on Mondays. They do Redemption Rock Convention for games. Like they have karaoke nights. They have poetry nights. They have drag story time. Like they have, and it's LGBTQ, like it is owned by like that community. Like, so they're super inclusive, like, but people don't know. And it's like getting them to like know that there's these spaces, these things that they can check out. And sometimes they need to be walked through, like getting over that initial like discomfort of putting themselves out initially, but like, you know, getting themselves in those spaces.
Yeah, we always advocate as the DMs, because we have Amber and Sarah, who were librarians, and they started, Amber started the Westbrook Public Library's RPG program.
Nice. Not
every library is going to have that, but do check your library, because I, you know, there's a lot of overlap between avid readers and gamers and people, you know, there might be events there where you can meet people. And again, it's a safe space. Mm-hmm. It's a public place. It is most likely going to be monitored in a way that you can feel comfortable going there and interacting with people.
Right.
For sure.
I had to bring up real quick, Liz, we can't talk about loneliness without me bringing up one of the interesting facts I learned fairly recently, but I think it's one of the oldest continuous running studies like in existence.
Yep.
It's a Harvard study that's been going on for almost 80 years now, or actually just over 80 years. And it basically analyzed just in detail the lives of people and their health, their overall health and wellness throughout generations. I mean, this study encompassed people that went through war. It had, you know, people that were brilliant, you know, doctors, all the way down to people that were, you know, maybe unemployed, and everything on any end of that spectrum. And one of the most kind of remarkable discoveries of this Harvard study is they found that the single most detrimental factor that leads to early mortality, it's not obesity, it's not hypertension, it's not diabetes, it's not cancer, it's not heart disease. It's actually perceived loneliness is the number one thing. Mm-hmm. So we are a super social species. Right. I think RPGs are obviously a wonderful way to fight that. And so is therapy.
Yeah.
So I had to mention both of those things. Yeah, like there, that's too.
Similarly, did you read The Body Keeps Score?
Yes, yeah, so, I'm reading it right now. I'm not done with it though, so no spoiler alert.
The Body Keeps Score. It he did a similar study, but he did like neuro scans of the brain and like on people who survived 9/11 and. What he found, there was neurological differences that showed that people who had supportive, close network were more likely to not develop PTSD symptoms, as unlike others that did not have that supportive close network.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, it's not even just like, hey, this is like, there's like, there are brain changes happening.
Yes. Yes. There are physiological right, exactly. changes in the exactly. structures of our brains exactly. that happen because of stress and trauma and all of those things. And they're very real and they're very observable, quantifiable, all of those things. Mm-hmm. So
for sure. For sure.
Rainey, what else?
I was going to say, I mean, I don't know how you guys feel about it, but that you tied it up very nicely with RPGs are a great way and then therapy. And I didn't know if we've hit all of our topics. I don't know if this is a good spot to start wrapping up. It's up to you guys.
Yeah. Liz, is there anything else that you just absolutely wanted to, you couldn't end the session without addressing?
Not that I can think of. I think I tried to write some notes to myself. I think I hit all the things that I kind of wanted to speak on.
If you think of something later, it just means you have to come back and do this again with us. So it's not a big deal at all.
So then in that case, I will ask the first of the closing questions, which is, do you have any last bits of wisdom, advice, or homework for listeners?
My last bit for people is to not to think that they're afraid of their emotions and think that emotions or doing therapy is weird or only for certain types of people. The stigma is still there in 2024. And I think that it does people a disservice. We all experience, even therapists experience, bouts of time that are emotionally and mentally difficult. And getting support on that is not a matter of weakness. It is not a matter of something is wrong with you. It is a matter of like you are human. And like getting that support only allows you to do the things and live in the way that you want to be instead of being stuck in that longer than you need to.
That's great advice. That's a very good parting piece of wisdom.
Yes, definitely.
Second closing question is, are there any games you're excited to play or ideas you've been wanting to try in a game? Now, this is different for you because for you, you're like, well, I have to think about what I put in my... but anything you're excited about?
So as far as like games I want to play, it's already out and I have to, like, I have it. I just need to actually like play it. I'm going to put a shout out to my peeps at Restoration Games because they came out with a series called Unmatched and they recently came out with, Tales to Amaze, and Unmatched is this, kind of a player versus player game where you're basically like taking shots at each other, but it's kind of like, ever play the game in your head, like who would win, Genie versus Houdini, you know, like that kind of stuff. It is that in a board game and it is super fun, but the Tales to the Maze is a new collaborative version. So instead of playing player versus player, you're playing enemies across against the board, and I've dabbled in it, but I haven't really got to play it. So like I need to play it because I'm trying to demo it in like the next like Thursday night game thing. But it's super, like the game is like simple to learn, it's super fun, and it's just like it can go for a little while, but most of the time it's fairly quick. And it's just like a super fun, and all the expansions, like you can buy one of the games and just play it on and on. You don't need all of them, unlike me.
Right.
But,
yeah, you're talking to Rainy, Liz.
But like a lot of the games have like, you can interplay, like, so if you buy the Buffy expansion, you can play.
Oh my gosh.
I love the Buffyverse.
Say you buy Redemption Row, so you can play him against Luke Cage, for example. Like, so against what? Luke Cage, you know, like
I want to play Buffy versus Marvel. So
my favorite is like there's a card for Luke Cage, and he just like this like massive hit, and it's the card, all it says is Sweet Christmas. Like, that's all it said. Like,
Sweet Christmas.
I just looked up this, and this board game looks awesome. It comes with miniatures and everything. This is really cool.
The miniatures are gorgeous. Like, I've had some people, like, I have demoed just some of the Unmatched before, and some people who love to paint are just like, because it has a wash and it's like really nice. And like, people are like, I just want to buy the game and all the expansions just to paint all the minis. Like,
again, Christian.
For sure.
All right. So that brings us to our last question. Closing question. So once again, Liz, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us about geek therapy and all more reasons that RPGs are just incredible. But can you tell us if there's anything you want to pitch and where people can find you on the internet?
Sure. So like I said, I'm running currently like every fall and spring D&D groups. Usually they will center around either like social skills or relationship skills. I did one on self-esteem. The current spring one is on relationships and it'll wrap up in May. The next group will like kind of re-up in September. I'm not sure what the skills are going to be for that group yet. I might go back to social skills. Yes, for adults. And but so that's that. As far as finding me on the internet, you can find me on SerenityCoachingCounseling.com or just Psychology Today, Elizabeth Green, or on Geek Therapeutics. You can look up who is certified geek therapists on the website.
Perfect. I will have all that linked in the description. And thank you so much, Liz.
Thank you. I had such a fun time.
Yeah, Liz, this was amazing. Thank you again. Very much.
I appreciate it. You guys have a great night.
You too.
You too.